This is HPR episode 1734 entitled Vim Hints 3 and is part of the series Vim Hints. It is hosted by Dave Morris's and is about 26 minutes long. The summary is Hints and Tips for Vim Users Part 3.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hello everyone, this is Dave Morris, and today I've got Vim Hint number 3, and this being the third show in a series, we can now create a series on HPR for it. Now in this episode I want to look at moving around in the file that you're editing. I also want to add a few more things to the configuration file that we started constructing in the last episode. And moving around is one of the very powerful things you can do in Vim, and we'll see in future shows how you can link this with other actions. Some of the basic things you can do to move around, we've already seen to some extent. All of these movements are done in normal mode. That is the mode you're in when you first start up Vim. You've got the L, K, J, and H keys that we looked at before. These are the mid row of your keyboard. L means go right. Unfortunately, it always confuses me. J and K are down and up, and H is move left. Somebody said, remember the sequence by thinking of the J as a downward pointing arrow, and that should anchor the group. I don't know if you would find that useful. I find it slightly useful. It helps me. I tend to use the cursor keys myself. And of course, the cursor keys are the alternative to these movements. But today we've also got a few more that we're adding to this group. And that is, the first one is the dollar key. If you press the dollar key, it moves your cursor to the end of the line. And that's the end meaning the last character on the line. So some editors, at least in the midst of time, would assume that your line is 80 characters long, would position you to the 80th character. But if the line in your editor is only 10 characters long, then there is no 80th column, so as far as Vim's concerned. So it would position you to the 10th character. The alternative to the dollar key is the end key, in the one in the keypad with the home, page up, page down, insert, delete. So the next one is to move to the start of the line, that is character 1, and that's the 0 key, and the alternative to that is the home key. Now sometimes you might want to move, there might be some spaces at the start of your line, you might want to move to the first non-space character, or indeed non-tab character if that that's the case, and the up arrow or circumflex will do that. I call it up arrow, I suppose it's not really that at all, but it's an ingrained habit. People used to refer to it that way back in the day. The minus and plus keys are the last two in this group. Minus key moves up one line and positions the cursor on the first non-blank character. The plus key moves down one line. So you can think of them as decrementing and incrementing the line number. It moves down to the first non-blank character. Now, in the notes I've pointed out that when you're writing these things down, you can refer to them as sort of meta symbols, the characters I'm talking about, and this is what's done in the Vim documentation. So a less than sign, a U and a P, capital U, P, a greater than sign means the up key, the cursor up key, So there's a lot of them that are documented in this way. The only real reason that I'm mentioning them is because that's what I'm using now, from now on, in my notes. And also, it's what the Vim documentation uses, and it will be of relevance when you come to build up your own key sequences, which you can, Vim is very, very, very configurable, and you can build your own key sequences to do all manner of things. The only other thing to say about this really is that if you want to talk about these keys in conjunction with shift or control, that is, hold the shift key down and press this key, or hold the control key down and press it, then you put an S for shift inside these angle brackets, as I call them, or a C for control. Okay, don't want to spend too long on that. It's not that important. It's really a documentation thing rather than a podcast thing. So these movements don't seem to be very exciting. Many other editors will let you move up, down, left, right, etc. But Vim has got the added feature that you can put a number on the front of each of the commands. So if you typed 10L, then what that means is do the L command 10 times, which means move 10 characters to the right. You could also type in 10 and then press the right arrow key, the right cursor control key, and that would do the same thing. And the same goes for all of the other characters you looked at: 10H, 10 left key, 10K, or 10 followed by the up cursor key. The only ones in the group we've looked at that don't take account are the 0 or the home command, because it doesn't make a lot of sense to go to the start of the line multiple times, I guess, and the circumflex, similar argument. So these things are nice. You can whiz around lines and between lines and this sort of thing pretty easily in Vim. And we'll look at, in future shows, lots of other things that let you move around according to many other features of your file. We're going to start on some of these, I suppose you could call them sort of object movements. You're moving in relation to certain objects within the file. We'll look at word-related movements. Now, there are a group of commands in Vim which let you move the cursor in relation to words in the text. But then we reach a slight difficulty in terms of description, really. I think if you read the show notes, you'll find that this is pretty clear, but it's not an easy thing to talk about in a podcast, because we need to define what a word is. And in Vim there are two definitions, and it refers to them in the documentation as lowercase word, WRRD, and uppercase word. They mean two different things. Now, how on earth can I, without saying uppercase, lowercase all the time, it gets a little confusing. It's not easy to talk about. So what I'm going to do is just talk about them as word objects. And what I think I need to do is to try and describe why Vim is seeing these two different things. Now, I've put the definition from the Vim documentation into the notes to try and clarify this. But really, in essence, if you're moving by the lowercase form of word, the simple word object, then you're moving in a way that you would expect to move. So if you have, say, a word which is enclosed in quotes, then, and your cursor is on the first quote, and you want to move to a word, well, the word is that thing that's inside the quotes. And then if you move again, the word is the closing quote. So it's stopping at everything which can be defined as a word or a word boundary. But if you're looking at the other word object, the one that's written down as an uppercase word, then it would skip right over the punctuation. And the criterion for start and end of a word is whether they're separated by white space being that generic term that means space, tab, end of line. So the ones in lowercase, the reason these two definitions are in upper and lowercase, because the commands are in upper and lowercase. We'll come on to them in a moment. And the lowercase ones move in relation to what you'd expect to happen in terms of moving from one element of the text, delimited element of the text, to the next, whereas the uppercase thing is moves in relation to the boundaries between white space. All right, I think I've just proved that it is hard to explain this. So the commands that we're going to look at here are W, E, and B. Now, W, just talk about the lowercase one at the moment, it moves forward to the start of a word. Lowercase E moves forward to the end of a word. Lowercase B moves backwards to the start of a word. So you see, you can jump around a line pretty effectively just using lowercase versions of W, E, and B. I think you need to experiment with these things yourself to see how they work. It's really quite difficult to explain them. If you use the uppercase version, uppercase W, uppercase E, and uppercase B, they do the same general things, it's just that they stop on different boundaries. I do have an example in the notes where I took a line out of my log file. I just plugged in my MP3 player, came up on dev SDH, and I got an error message in the log file which talks about the fact that the MP3 player is a fat file system and it's moaning about aspects of this. I used it because it had hyphens and brackets and colon and comma and stuff in it, and I thought it would be a useful thing to demonstrate commands and movements on. I made a little diagram of where the cursor would be after certain movements, and I used the circumflex to point up to the line in question. I don't know how useful that is. I find it a little difficult to read because the circumflex is not a very obvious character. Maybe I need better glasses, I don't know. But I also wrote it out in text as clearly as I could. I'm not going to read this because I don't think it's a fantastically useful thing to read out on a podcast. So the thing I haven't said is that, of course, all of these movement commands can be preceded by a numeric count. So 5W means go 5 words forward, and 5B means go 5 backwards, and so on. My examples use counts. And of course the other factor that I haven't mentioned is that the two forms of W and the two forms of B both have counterparts using the cursor keys. So shift right is the same as lowercase W. Control right is the same as uppercase W. Shift left is the same as lowercase B. And control left is the same as uppercase B. The E's don't have anything in the way of cursor controls. So I guess it's personally, I tend not to use the cursor keys for these types of movements. I would be using the W, E, and B. And I'd have abandoned the cursor keys. So really, I should teach myself to use the HJK business, as I think I've said before. Okay, that's all I'm going to say about movement today. I hope it's pretty clear, both the way I've expressed it and also the notes. Any feedback on this, I'd appreciate, because this is, I know, a difficult area since we're using audio only here, and I plan only to use audio. Now we're going to move on to looking at the configuration file. So in the last episode, I told you about the commands set compatible, set backup, set undo dir to point to a directory, and set undo file switch on the persistent undo feature. Today we're going to look at a few more things, and the first one is adding a ruler. A ruler is a display at the bottom of the screen that gives you information about stuff, and you enable it with the command in your config file set space ruler. That's set space ruler. And this causes the line and column number of the cursor position to be shown at the bottom right of the screen. The two numbers are separated by commas. And if there's enough room, then the relative position, the cursor in the text, is not so much the cursor, actually, the displayed text, because you've got a view into a larger thing through a window, effectively, and that's shown. So if the file you're looking at is positioned so that the top of the file is visible, then the word top appears in the ruler. If it's positioned so that the last line is visible, then BOT, bottom, is written in the ruler. And if you can see both the top and the bottom, because it's just a small file, then all, ALL, is in the ruler. And if you've got a much bigger file and you're somewhere else in it, then a percentage number will be put to the right of the ruler. Now, the set ruler command can be abbreviated to SE space RU. I think I would discourage you from doing that unless you really want to, because you're going to get very confused by all these abbreviations if you're not careful. I certainly am, so you might be cleverer than me, but I don't know. I prefer to use the full form anyway. You can switch the ruler off if for some reason you want to disable that, then set no ruler will switch it off. There's not much point in having that in your config file. So remember, these are commands, so you can, in normal mode, you can press the colon key and then type the command. So colon set space no ruler will switch off the ruler temporarily. So sorry about the noises off. I'm sitting in my kitchen with the door open, and you can hear the ambient sounds outside, maybe, don't know. One thing is, and we'll probably be getting onto this later, you can customize the ruler, change its layout. The layout I mentioned is the default. The other thing I found when researching this, and I hadn't quite appreciated before, is that a number of Linux distributions set this option for you. When you install Vim, it comes with system-wide config, which sets various things. I run Debian testing, and there's a set ruler definition I found in one of the config files provided in the package. I put the path in case you're interested in the notes, but I won't read it out. I think it's a good idea to set this in your config file, because you then have a config file that you could move elsewhere, possibly to a system that doesn't preset this for you. So now we've got the ruler, but the ruler doesn't look particularly nice. It's just sitting on the bottom line, and that line's also used for entering commands and things. So there's another feature, which is a status line. And normally when you're running Vim in its very default mode, the whole window is available to you except the last line, as we just mentioned. And in there you'll get messages, and you'll get, that's where you put your commands. But you can open this up a bit using the command set last status. Now, if you set that to equal to, set last status equals to, then it will produce another line over the top of that command line, which is in inverse color, usually black, white on black, actually, I think. Though, again, you can configure that, change colors and do all sorts of fancy things. The status line's got the name of the file being edited in it. And if you've enabled the ruler, that's where the ruler will go. And that's actually quite a nice layout. That's what would be my default. There's a picture in the notes which shows what that looks like. The only thing is that in the original days of VI, when it was developed on hardware terminals, which were 24 lines by 80 columns, then taking away two lines at the bottom might have been a bad idea. But today we all have enormous monitors. We can create terminals, virtual terminals of any old size we like, pretty much. then I don't think it's a big deal. The command can be abbreviated. I won't go into what it is. It's in the notes. And you can switch it off with set space last status equals zero. Final command that I'm going to add this time is the set show mode command, which shows what mode you're in. Remember, Vim's a modal editor with many modes, some of which we've yet to look at, and it doesn't tell you which mode you're in by default. Setting this option, show mode, will give you information about the mode you're in if you go into insert mode, for example, and various other modes. Now, in my case, again, Debian testing has set this for me, but I still like to put it in my config file. I've said in the notes that with show mode enabled, and when you go into insert mode, you get a little message at the bottom of the screen that indicates you're in insert mode. You can switch this off, set no show mode if you want to, and you could do that temporarily during an editing session if you wanted to. So the final point about the config file is to point out that you can intersperse blank lines in your comment, in your config file, and that's often a good thing because it makes things more readable. You can also group related commands together, and you can also add comments. And a comment is a comment character. A thing that opens a comment is a double quote character. The double quote is usually put in the first column, and then you would type a comment after it. So in the notes, there's a screenshot, as I mentioned before, showing, in fact, me editing the notes in Markdown format. And it's got a ruler, it's got a status line, and I think it's the point at which I just opened the file up. So there's a little message at the bottom that reports the file name, its length, and the number of characters. So which is, at that point, somewhat longer than the maximum. It's even longer now. So that's it, really, in terms of the content this week. I wanted to just mention at the end that I've got into the habit of putting a summary at the end of these notes, hopefully so you can go and have a quick look at the commands we've covered. And there's one there for the various movement commands we've looked at. And there's also a list of the contents of the configuration file that I have constructed for this particular show, with all the commands we had before and the new ones with blank lines and with comments. So I hope you'll find that is helpful. Other than that, I've just got links in the end there pointing to the previous two shows, and I'll try and continue to do that so you can hop around between shows if you ever want to refer back to anything. But hopefully once we've got it set up as a series, you can also walk through the series. I'm hoping other people might like to contribute to the Vim series at some point in the future as well, which would be nice. So that's the end of it. That's all from me. Speak to you again soon. Bye bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.